Welcome to NPR's All Songs Considered, highlights from NPR's online music show. Enjoy.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from MasterCard, accepted worldwide. There are some things money can't buy. For everything else, there's MasterCard.
From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan here today with Tom Verlaine. I'm in Washington, D.C. Tom Verlaine played with a band in New York City called Television in the 1970s, makes great music still. Two new records are out. One is called Around, and the other new record is called Songs and Other Things. How are you doing, Tom Verlaine?
Pretty good.
For those of you who don't know Tom Verlaine and the band Television, why don't we just start off and play one bit of a song and give people an idea of what the heck we're talking about here from the LP Marquee Moon, and this is Marquee Moon. That was the end of side one to the LP Marquee Moon. In the band, Tom Verlaine, one of the two guitar players, Richard Lloyd, Fred Smith, who's a bass player, Billy Fike, a drummer. You were a curious band for me because it was a time where that whole idea of guitar solos and all that was coming, was so passe, and we've heard so much of it. And then you guys came out and you were sort of this guitar band, but it wasn't like any of that. What do you think was the difference?
Well, we weren't real distorted, for one. It wasn't the big, loud blues fuzz solo thing. Mm-hmm. I think that was one main difference. And I do think the guitar thing is, the guitar solo thing is somewhat exaggerated. I mean, we did have a long cut on our first record, but most of the songs were under 5 minutes and kind of classically structured, you might say.
I'll ask you to play DJ for a little bit here. Pick one tune. We'll talk about it and maybe see how it fits into what you do, what you love.
Yeah, well, we could maybe start with this Charlie Mingus thing. It's a thing called Hog Callin' Blues from a record called Oh Yeah. And in the early 60s, I was playing saxophone. Before that, I played piano, but I did all this stuff before guitar. And this was like, I found like an amazing, exciting record. Just all the solos on it, everything about it. I mean, you can hear Charlie yelling stuff in the background on it. It's just such a cool, cool record that I thought it'd be great to play it on the radio.
Let's listen to Charlie Mingus, and the cut is called Hog Callin' Blues.
Yeah.
Wow. How old were you when you heard that?
Oh, 11 or 12, maybe.
That's fantastic. Did you thumb through bins to hear it? Somebody turn you on to it?
I think I had, that was maybe in the second year of listening to jazz. I think I was in Wilmington, Delaware. There was one tiny shop next to the fish markets that sold jazz records, and I went in there, and they always locked the door behind me because I think they were actually kind of scared. What was this white boy doing in this neighborhood kind of thing? And the guy said, well, what do you want? And I said, you know, if you heard Charlie Mingus, he said, sure. And I think he said, this one's really good. And so, yeah.
Mingus, I think, is playing piano on that.
He's playing piano on that. I can't remember. Is it Danny Richmond, maybe? Or is that the
sax player?
No, the drummer.
The drummer.
One of the sax players is definitely Roland Kirk.
And maybe Booker Irvin, I don't know.
Yeah, I think Booker Irvin, yeah.
And when you were playing sax, I assume maybe you were playing in the school band?
No, no. I was, I just got a pawn shop thing in an alto, and and then I ended up trading that in for a soprano, and just bought a fingering book, and my best friend played a tenor, but he wanted to make his horn sound different, like Roland Kirk, so he sawed off the bell. And then he sawed a spit tune in half and masking taped it around there so he could have a different sound.
What'd Mom and Dad think of that?
Well, they usually can only have our jam sessions when they were out of the house.
So. Bet.
But there is some tapes of this I'm trying to track down because my dad had a tape deck. So
was your dad an audiophile or one of those?
No, he
would
just
kind of.
He had a no. I remember him having a pretty big mono unit actually for years and playing the Frank Sinatra and stuff. And but he did have a tape deck. I remember that. So
that wasn't very common for that.
I guess not. I mean, I actually don't know why he had it because he never seemed to use it, and he showed me how to record things on there. So.
Very cool. I hope you find those tapes. Pick something else for me.
Yeah, this is a piece I heard first. I was living in England in the mid-80s, and there was a Polish import shop there, and a very big shop, and on the balcony they had these records, and I asked the woman, can I go up on the balcony and look at the records? She said, yeah, they're all a pound a piece, which was about $1.40 for new vinyl records. And so I just grabbed a handful of some modern Polish composers I never heard, and this was a really beautiful piece. I think it's three pieces in old style for string orchestra. And Gorecki, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, was up until a certain point writing, for lack of a better word, no rhythm, no melody music, and which is, you know, the kind of prevalent tendency of the late 20th century, especially
long developing pieces.
Right, and then at this point he wrote this thing, as he says, in the old style, and it's kind of deceptively simple piece, but I think it's a great piece for strings.
Great.
Yeah, a real nice piece, I always thought.
Do you have a big record collection still?
I have a lot of vinyl sitting around. Not that many CDs, really, but a couple hundred at least vinyl records. Mm-hmm. Maybe even 1,000 by now.
Do you ever listen to NPR or All Things Considered at all?
Yeah, now and then.
So you may have heard We Sneak Your Music On Now and Again.
Yep. Yep. In fact, I think I heard it once between shows or something as a kind of background thing.
That's very possible. Does that bother you? Does it matter? Does it feel weird? Does it?
No. I just remember being surprised and thinking, oh. Didn't know what to make of it, but it's okay.
Well, I direct All Things Considered when I'm not doing stuff like this, and it's one of those CDs that when there are stories that have an sort of this ambiguity or questioning or something that doesn't resolve, I tend to want to pull something from your music, and there's something that happens in your music for me as a listener that has that, it's not completely mystery, but mystery is sort of the place I'd push it towards. It's pliable. Your music to me, especially the instrumental music, is very, depending on the mood that you're in, the music can fit the mood. And and then if you're in a different mood, that same music will then move for me and change. Does that make any sense?
That could make sense.
If you were me, it makes a whole lot of sense, but you're not. Anyway, let's listen to the opening cut from Warm and Cool and by Tom Verlaine from 1992. Playing, Tom.
Well, thank you.
And the drumming is pretty spectacular, too. Spectacular maybe is the wrong word, but...
So yeah, it's that old style of the brushes on the snare drum with the microphone cranked up real loud. And Bill Ficker did the drums on that. He's one of the few guys that can play that slow. It's like finding a drummer to play slow and still kind of make it groovy somehow is not easy.
A geeky question. Mm-hmm. There's a real clean sound that you always seem to have that is very attractive to me and obviously to you. What are you playing through? What kind of guitar? What amp?
Well, there's a whole pile of smaller amps. A lot of them are actually from the 1940s. There were actually these kind of PA, public address system amps you would see in bingo halls or, ladies' church meeting rooms. And these were actually... When you get down to the mechanics, they were made for voice, and they actually, when they started building guitar amps, they started making them louder and louder, particularly in the accenting the mid-range and rolling off the bass and all these other different things. So I started finding these things again at like flea markets and stuff and really cheap in the 80s, and just they're very easy to adapt for guitar. And then, you buy a nice speaker, put it in the cabinet, and you can... swap amps left and right instantly by just changing the chord. And there's a lot of different guitars on that record. There's some old hollow body things from the 60s. There's one of my favorites is this something made in Italy with a lot of buttons on it. Probably not big collector item guitars or something. They just have a twang. That's really the word for it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you pick us out something else, Tom Verlaine?
All right, this is a record I discovered a couple years ago. It's a soundtrack to Experiment in Terror, and the music is Henry Mancini. This has a very, very cool guitar part, but also just a great arrangement, actually a great sound quality, too. All live, a couple mics in a big room. This is the main theme here now.
From Experiment in Terror, Henry Mancini. That is a great guitar. Any idea who it was? I mean, a lot of these musicians for soundtracks, you hardly ever knew.
Yeah, I don't. I know that Mancini had a crew of guys that he used all the time, so it might have been a guy named Bob Bain, but I'm not sure.
What is it about the twang in it, for me, and I hear it in Duane Eddy's stuff?
It's an atmosphere, that vibrato and that old-fashioned reverb sound that just has some kind of special quality. The guy has written a book, I think, called it's a very academic study of the use of reverb on recordings.
I saw this book.
I think it's called Space. Yeah, Space and Reverb or something. I think it's Duke University, but it's wild because he's trying to locate the first record which created which had an echo effect, and I think it was a cowboy song in which they had the guys. It was supposed to sound like some lonesome guy in the hills or something, and the train whistle with some sort of artificial reverb, and how this really captured people. No one had heard this kind of sound on the radio in the 40s or whenever, mm-hmm. and this whole kind of imitation space or trying to make something with the... I don't know what they used back then. They ran the signal out to a... speaker and stuck it in an oil tank or something.
Or the men's room.
Yeah, or the men's room.
In Elvis's case, the hallway or the...
Right.
Whatever. You talked about Billy Ficke and his playing of the drums so slowly. The guitar there is incredibly slow, and that's something that you do. Is that hard to do?
No, not really. It does require a mood. I don't know if I would... I don't know if I would do 20 takes of something like that. I think most of the both instrumental records is one or two takes and then try something else, The new one, the one called Around, is I think almost all first takes, and then in some cases editing quite a bit. Something might have been 5 minutes long cut down to two, mm-hmm. or 8 minutes long cut down to three, kind of thing.
You want to pick me a cut from Around? We can play some of that. That might fit nicely.
Well,
here.
Yeah, we can try again. Maybe this this first one on there, which is just kind of a solo guitar piece.
Do you remember the names of your tunes?
The O of a Door. Okay. There you go.
This is and called a door is not what you open and close. And
right. The O of a Door as an adoration.
Okay. Music's incredibly cinematic, and maybe that's sort of what I was trying to get at before when I said it's pliable and malleable, that it conjures up so much. And
well, thanks.
It's really amazing.
There was a little organ in the background that I had forgotten. I'd put a little droney organ back there.
How would you write a piece of music like that? I mean, do you sit around in at home doing this?
Well, that actually was a lucky moment of a... somebody I knew was selling a guitar, and he said, I'll drop it by the studio if you might want to buy it. So he dropped it by, and actually before I had gotten there to the studio that day, and I went in and plugged it in, and I said, well, let's just record this. And so maybe it was the fact of having a very different guitar in hand, and just ended up playing this thing, and I thought, oh, you know, I think I can use that. And I, you know, made a cassette and took it home, and it was actually another 3 minutes longer on there than a... So when I just mixed it and put the organ in. I mean, that was just kind of a lucky improvisational moment, I guess, of a certain mood or something. Here's a cut from another 50s thing. It's one of the themes from The Day the Earth Stood Still, using some theremins. Bernard Herrmann. Yeah.
Bernard Herrmann. Yeah,
I always have trouble with names. This piece is... I don't know, it's somehow really memorable, some very odd melody.
Oh, it made a completely cheesy film fantastic, actually, I think the soundtrack did.
Yeah, yeah. It's somehow, it's a real memorable piece. It's still a very memorable film, too. The images from that film stick in my mind probably as much as any other film I've ever seen, so...
And if you ever come to Washington, it's hard not to be around the monument and stuff and think about that movie still for me. And I've lived here since I left New York, I've lived here for 30 years. And
Well, that one and Earth versus Flying Saucers are terrific for Washington, D.C. things, especially the little models and the models of the buildings that the animator Harryhausen built.
Oh, right.
Little saucers, you know, crashing into the pillars of one of the, I forget the name of that huge building down there. It's nice.
I think it was it might have been the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to Bernard Herrmann and the theme to The Day the Earth Stood Still. Talk about evocative.
Yeah, that's also, I didn't notice, never really noticed before, but the percussion keyboardy thing there is like an early use of that endless eighth note thing that, you know, Philip Glass and all those people use.
They all watch the same movies.
Well, if it's strange, I never really realized this. I mean, this is like, I don't know, what, 1955, 58?
51, and you've got that, I think.
Whoa,
I think
really?
It was 51. I could be wrong, but I think it was.
Yeah, and you have that odd endless pulsing keyboardy thing going on. Huh.
There's a guy, I think it's Samuel Hoffman, Dr. Samuel Hoffman, who is the guy who played the theremin in probably every single science fiction movie.
Yeah, it was. Hoffman, right. Yep.
So you've done these two records, and one of them is instrumental, one of them is almost completely, well, they're instruments, of course, but only one song is without voice. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to ask you to pick one from the new CD, this vocal CD, Songs and Other Things. But before we do, tell me about the band that you're taking on tour and where you're heading. And
right. Well, the band will be Fred Smith from television, who's always done my solo tours, and a guy named Jimmy Rip, who likewise has also done all my solo tours.
As
and
guitarist.
Then the drummer. That's the guitarist, yeah. And the drummer, Louis Appel, who did most of the new vocal record as well.
Pick a cut for us from the new CD. And
let's do A Day on You.
Okay.
Or the day on You.
Tom Verlaine, thanks for doing this.
Okay,
thank you. Appreciate
it.
Be well. Tom Verlaine, he has two new CDs out. One's called Around. It's the instrumental CD. The other's called Songs and Other Things. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
home. The day wears you, the day wears you like a golden gown.
Thanks for listening. You'll find more about this program and a listing of NPR stations online at npr.org.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the 7-passenger Acura MDX. Information at acura.com.